This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of February the 1st, 2021. I'm Mason King.
He wouldn't be afraid to show his feminine side if he had one. His mother has a tattoo that reads, "Son." At museums, he's allowed to touch the art. He is the most interesting man in the world.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. You probably remember the long-running Dos Equis ad campaign that featured the world's most interesting man. It occurred to me as I was preparing for this week's podcast that Indianapolis's own Turner Woodard, now 72 years old, would be a pretty good candidate for the title. He's an artist who draws inspiration from the mid-century abstract expressionists such as Jackson Pollock. He's a motor racing enthusiast who has competed in the Sports Car Vintage Racing Association, has sponsored cars in the IndyCar series, and owns a huge collection of race cars, sports cars, and historically significant automobiles. He's a philanthropist through his family foundation. And as we'll discuss today, he's a real estate investor and redeveloper who specializes in what we call adaptive reuse, taking an old building or site and reusing it for a different purpose. Back in 1992, before this was a common way to help save historic buildings, Woodard bought the 400,000 square foot Stutz Motor Car Company factory at 10th and Capitol on the northern edge of downtown. It was built in 1911, was closed in 1935, reopened in 1940 as a packing facility for Eli Lilly and Company, then closed again in the 1980s, and was in danger of being torn down. Woodard envisioned it as a business center for small and mid-sized companies, and over the years, that's what it became, as well as a haven for dozens and dozens of artists who appreciated Woodard's flexibility in creating small studio spaces. Now called the Stutz Business and Arts Center, the building has long served as one of the city's prime examples of how to save historic buildings from the wrecking ball while encouraging uses that add to the city's commercial and cultural vibrance. And Woodard expects that legacy to remain intact after selling the majority interest in the building to Somera Road, an out-of-state real estate firm that also has a reputation for adaptive reuse. Woodard and his son Turner John will retain a minority interest. Neither side is sharing any other details of the transaction, which closed on January 28th. Woodard says to expect many physical upgrades to the building, and Somera Road promises that it plans to keep its historic flavor and work with the current tenants to figure out what works best going forward. The company says it's not ready to talk about any specifics, although adding some kind of residential component is a possibility at some point. A day after the sale closed, I talked to Turner Woodard about his history with the building, its revitalization, and why he thought the time was right to sell his majority stake. Here's our conversation. Turner Woodard, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Mason. You're very welcome.
Now, I want to check in quickly on the transaction that I understood closed yesterday. You sold the majority interest in the Stutz Business and Art Center to the real estate firm. Is it Somera Road? Is that the correct way to say it?
Yes, okay. Somera Road. Uh-huh.
Although you and your son, Turner John Woodard, will retain a minority interest. How are you feeling today?
Well, that's a nice question. I've been asked it a few times already this morning, and really, we're feeling fine. We're feeling fine. The deal was, several months in the works. It, was up and down and around and traumatic at times, but at the end of the day, the meaning and the purpose for the sale was accomplished, and we're very happy about it. Certainly some melancholy to it, but we saved it from the wrecking ball, and that was about 30 years ago.
Well, first, take me back to 1992 or thereabouts. You're touring the property for the first time. Take me through that experience. What was that like? I mean, what did you see?
With my mother and my stepfather and my insurance agent? And it's like, Turner, you're thinking about doing what? What? At this big old building? Of course, my stepfather, a man named Van Riper, he knew of the Stutz Motor Car Company and he knew a bit of the history. So he thought it was pretty neat. And my mother, of course, walking around the perimeter of it, Mason, in those days was pretty daunting. But there's no doubt that they thought that if I thought I could pull it off, they were behind me. My insurance guy, not so much, but he'll do what you will, insure whatever I do.
So you guys had to go in there with flashlights, right? I mean, there wasn't electricity in part of the building.
Oh, that's right. How do you know that?
Oh, yes. I've been around for a while.
yeah, that is exactly true. Where we're sitting now up in the executive offices for a creative package, lights didn't work. All flashlights for about 3 or 4 visits.
Yeah. And so what did people say at the time when you told them what you planned to do?
Yeah, mostly, really? Really? You're going to try that? And yeah, I think, you know, again, the family, you know, had confidence. And I had done, by this time, I'd done 2 or 3 other sort of turnaround projects and adaptive reuse that had become pretty successful, you know, been able to do exactly what my vision was, just not on this scale on Capitol Avenue. And yet, which was really still part of a little bit of a rough side of town. The canal was not finished. It was half dirt. Neighborhood wasn't the best. But most people were cautionary, as I was. But the real deal, Mason, was when myself and the family and the team came inside the factory, it was pretty clear it should not be knocked down.
So you're walking through the building, and then what are you envisioning? What did you think you were going to do with it?
Sort of had no idea. Not exactly, but really, Mason, for your listeners, it was to save it and to sort of put it out there and open it up and let's see what the public and see what the business community has to say. It's been closed for 10 years, really not much activity, and we had a thing you'll like that was lighted up so we could see what we just bought, clean it up, paint it up, lease it up. You know, that's basically what we did. And we allowed people to take, you know, 1,000 square feet or 500 square feet or 6,000 square feet. You have your pick. That slowly but slowly started to work in a plant that had been passed by for years, but never anybody really knew much about.
I want to just backtrack a little bit for folks who aren't real familiar with you or the building. What is your family's history in Indianapolis? Were you guys connected to the auto industry at all?
No, we were not. My dad was a patent lawyer here in town. Woodard, Weichert, Emhart, Naughton, and really the first and maybe only now, you know, single patent office. So around the dinner table, we'd get lots of unique and wonderful ideas and discussions. So it always was a little bit of a creative atmosphere. And again, most everybody knew that my family, that this was the Stutz plant. And I enjoyed cars. One of the things I did like in school was history. So, you know, that combination was pretty nice.
Can you give us a sense of what you bought it for back in 1992?
Well, those are private things, and I don't discuss those much, but that was key to it, you know, that there had been a huge asking price, and that wasn't going to work. So I was able to buy it at a number that did allow to take a chance.
I think at the time people were reporting, I guess the press was reporting, it was about $1 million. That was the purchase price. Were we in the right ballpark?
No comment.
Okay.
Those are private. I do keep those things private. I think, Mason, where maybe we did succeed in the early 90s was that we had reasonable rates, very reasonable rates. We were probably at $7 a square foot, you know, something like that. Maybe even $5 if you took enough. You could just tell me how much you wanted. And then we'd put up the walls and then the tenants and the businesses would have at it. They just took it from there. I didn't get involved.
And you were pretty lucky, as I recall, to have a few big users pretty early on. Was the state already up on the top floor and they had a big chunk of space?
You have done your homework. You have done your, that's exactly right. Okay. And Mason, it was the most inefficient inventory, you know, stacking, filing system, you know, you've ever seen. And Of course, the governor probably didn't want to hear it at the time, but, you know, everything was on the floor in boxes. And depending on how they were arranged and the color, you could maybe find something. But yes, they were on the top floor, and I slowly had to, you know, raise that rent. And then I had another guy that wanted 50,000 square feet as long as I could provide him with a dry and no birds. I thought for a moment, and I can do that. Yes, I can do that.
That's a pretty low bar. Dry and no birds.
Yes.
Was that the Chinese restaurant supply company? Was that what that was? Or
yes, yes. Yeah.
Over the years, it becomes a hotbed, really, for artist studios. How did that happen?
Again, and, you know, another interesting story. I hope your listeners will, you know, how things like this happen. Do they just happen, or do they happen? But we had this wonderful big old historic plant, and nobody knew much about it. But we had a couple of groups, we're probably in 1993 now, 94, you know, that came to us and wanted to have some events and hold some bigger parties and fundraisers. And we're tired of just going to the same old, and they approached us. And really one of the very first ones you might remember back in those days was, you know, AIDS was on the radar and very controversial. And I think they were having a hard place to hold this fundraiser. And my family and I, we said, what the hell? Sure, we'll help them. Let's just do it. And believe it or not, that was a little bit of a springboard to, you know, there's 600-700 people here. And it was wonderful. And, you know, I think everyone came away with a sense of pride and sort of started discovering this factory. And from there, we did Hooray for Harry, 400 people for the Humane Society. And those events, Mason, caused two things to happen. Number one, caused our team to get things really shiny and fixed up. And then, you know, the word got out. You've been down to the Stutz factory? And my friend, that's exactly sort of how it happened. Sort of took off from there. But it's kind of interesting. We break our class, our tenant class, down into creative office space, creative technology space, advertising, marketing, all those kind of creative spaces that still call their offices studios. You know, in the artist category, there's probably 50, 55, and they provide an atmosphere here and a spirit here that literally no landlord or no investment banker guy could, you can't buy it. You know, it's just very special. Mm-hmm. And then that attracts others. And those days, you know, when I could give an artist, I would have, you know, 800 spaces left over or 800 feet, you know, because one to take another. And then I've got this extra space. Constance Skopelidis is a perfect example. She took about 500 square feet over the alley. That kind of was cool, but mainstream wouldn't want it. I gave Connie a deal. She's been here ever since. Then that repeated, Mason, time after time, John Ross, C.W. Mundy, and I could give them a bit of a break on the rent, and everyone flourished.
Well, and you helped encourage that with the annual artist open house that you would hold. How many years had that been going on?
Oh, wow. Have you ever been to it?
I've been a few times, yeah.
How long has it been going on, guys?
26
years. Okay. 26 years. We didn't have it, you know, in 2020, but this year it's slated for October of 21. The new owners are very much in favor of it and are going to help back it like I did in the early days. And we hope it'll be wonderful. It was a very special night, about 6,000-7,000 people through here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is a massive undertaking. It's hard even to sort of describe being a part of it. So the tenant mix is that they kind of evolved over the years. Is that fair to say? Including maybe over the last decade or so, including tech startups?
Absolutely. No, you're right on exactly like it has in most of our lives. And again, a very interesting switch. We still have company here that makes machines that test the efficiency of jet airplane engines and sells and monitors jet engines all over the world. We have a company here that makes widgets that's, you know, in the business of creating products. You know, people bring them ideas and their team. And that's begun the shift to more of the high tech. We have a company here that deals in seamless parking. You know, when you go into a parking garage, you don't have to touch or deal with anything. It's all electronic. And they've expanded a couple of times. So it's been a joy to see. And you're right. It has transitioned.
I didn't realize widgets were a real thing. I thought that they were like mythical. like it was another way of saying thingamajig.
Thingamajigs. Right. Yeah. They have shelves of them down there.
Wow. I got to go see some real widgets.
Yes. Yes.
So it's coming. Or as recently as a couple of years ago, when we were talking to you about the building, you said that you had no intention of selling the building. You have not actually literally sold the building, but you've sold the majority interest in it. What's it changed your mind this time?
Probably, Mason, as you and your listeners will understand, you know, a time, evolution. I think there were three things with this deal. Number one, the Samara Road. Mason, they pursued it. They went after the acquisition of the asset and with my family, and they did it sort of the right way. You know, they did it with a certain amount of sophistication, a certain amount of eager, and class. They didn't overdo it. And then once you sort of pass that hurdle, that I took the call, I have this sort of rule that I'll make somebody call me three times just to see how, you know, how interested they are in talking to me if I don't know them.
Is that right? And you make them ask three times.
No, I should admit that on the air, should I?
Is that an actual business practice? Everybody knows that if you talk to Turner, you got to call him three times.
Well, you know, if they call Mason and they want to talk to Woodward Turner.
Yeah.
Then I do. So they were persistent and they did it nicely. Once we had a chance to sit down and my son sat in on the conversations early, we thought, gosh, maybe this is for real. And their visions align with what we had undertaken as a Stutz 5-year refresh program. And we are just about a year into truly pulling the trigger on that with elevators and new air conditioning, just many of the things that will happen now, the windows, roofs, skylights, new food amenities. So we were all thinking along the same lines. And it was a little bit like the Canterbury Hotel, even that as I looked to improve that project and property, we needed some help and some expertise, and we brought in some guys that, you know, well, why don't we either team up or why don't you just sell it to us? That's kind of what happened. I would say, Mason, the third thing that happened was, you know, I turned 70 years old, you know, had been through the estate planning with my parents and knew what an important part of life that was. And the appearance of Samara Road, the timing was right. You know, they're building a wonderful museum for my Stutz car collection on property. I'm keeping my studio over in the Stutz 2 building. So they showed genuine interest in having the family and us involved.
So the best of your knowledge, the plan is to keep it essentially what it is, which is a home for different kinds of businesses, artists, small businesses, manufacturers, what have you, but freshen it up.
Really freshen it up.
Yeah.
Really freshen it up. If you look at some projects, one of theirs was a project where FedEx is involved in the old Gibson guitar factory in Memphis. They have connections to the Ponce City market in Atlanta. that was a 2 million square foot, that was a Sears and Roebuck catalog center. And Mason is just a wonderful readaption. You know, things that we knew had to be done, and we were going to have the vision and then have the capital as well. You know, we were lucky that we could do it, but I think it turned out that, yeah, having a partner and then agreeing to sell them the majority, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Let's do this podcast again in a couple of years.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the pessimistic among us would think, well, you know, they'll keep the tenants in there for a couple of years and then they'll turn it into a big Target with apartments on top. Is that a possibility? Anything like that?
You know, it's probably somewhat of a possibility, but I doubt it. I think they're certainly open-minded enough, and people have to realize that I think they will be going for some larger tenants, not to the exclusion of the little guy. They promised that. But I think the property will be divided. You know, it's 500,000 square feet. So they will be going after some of the more grade A tenants. And in order to do that, they have to provide grade A space. So there will be some of that movement going about. No Target. There will not be a Target. But there will be some very cool changes. And they may at some point involve some residential.
Well, best of luck to you. Yeah, let's check back in a couple of years and see see where things are.
That would be very nice.
My thanks again to Turner Woodard. If you'd like to learn more about the Samara Road transaction, just go to ibj.com and type in STUTZ in the search field. That's STUTZ, S-T-U-T-Z, STUTZ. That should be the first story that pops up after this week's edition of the podcast. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few stories in the latest edition of IBJ I want to draw to your attention. First up, downtown hoteliers say they're confident they will be well-staffed and ready to go in 6 weeks when March Madness comes to town, bringing a sudden influx of thousands of guests to a market that has been operating well below usual levels since the pandemic began. IBJ's Mickey Shuey sheds light on the needs hoteliers are trying to anticipate as they gear up for the rush. Also in this week's paper, Greg Andrews unpacks the ramifications of a settlement that will cost Indianapolis-based health insurer Anthem nearly $600 million. Despite the jaw-dropping price tag, the deal is viewed by some investment analysts as a huge win for the company. And Lindsay Aridoni reports on legislative efforts to establish workplace accommodations for pregnant women in Indiana, one of about 20 states that doesn't have any on the books. Again, you can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say, it's quite a bit easier to access all of IBJ's latest news and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com, click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.